Let's begin.
Welcome to Build an Agency, a podcast where we talk about the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, growth tactics, building businesses, and the events that affect your company. Let's jump right in. Welcome back to the podcast. We're doing episode 2, and I'm sitting here in our studio with Attilio.
What's up, guys? Thanks for coming back. We've seen some actually really surprisingly good results for podcast listener turnout. So we're actually mega humbled, super love to you guys. And a super huge shout out to our one review. iTunes. Hey, you got to start somewhere. you do have to start somewhere. Yes to Payday. Hero right now. if anyone else leaves us reviews, that'd be sweet. We just want to help entertain you guys, and it was a great review. Anything we can do to keep boosting the entertainment value or boosting the educational value, super helpful.
Leave us your review, good or bad. So if you think that this podcast is really good and valuable for you, please tell us. And if you think we're the worst podcasters of all time, please also tell us, because we'll probably still read your tweet on the air.
And ignore it, maybe. No, I don't know.
it's not on the air.
And it's not a tweet, but...
It's not on the air.
Well, it is pretty much... Since we don't edit this, this is basically live. It's just we post it 2 days later.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. We are for sure solidifying Tuesday post days. So this is the hone to build an agency podcast featured on Tuesdays. Boom. Tuesdays. Remember that, Tuesdays.
Yep. We're going to try and be a lot more scheduled about posting these things and more regular.
I think last week we did a Wednesday thing.
Yeah, we did a Wednesday thing, but it was Easter weekend, so it kind of disrupted everything.
Also, I think we were having some issues a little
bit. Oh, my God. Don't even. Okay, so last episode I told you I'd list out all my podcast blunders so far, and I'm sure there'll be more on this episode. But we had our SEO on the phone with us. And I was using Google Meet. It's the new version of Google Hangouts. Yeah. And I was trying to record his audio off of QuickTime. You can do an audio recording through that. And I don't think I understood how that worked very well. So I actually ended up spending a ton of hours that day. I had other things to do trying to fix Ryan's audio. It was insane. I was going deep into the waveform and I don't know, just doing all kinds of stuff. It was
found some automated game things and some interesting Adobe.
Well, I learned a lot about Adobe Audition, which is the program we use to record this on. There's a lot of good effects and different things that were really helpful to bring his audio to where you could at least hear it. We were super loud and he was barely audible or whatever. Yeah. So I spent forever working on that. We had a ton of upload problems. I think we uploaded episode 2 initially to iTunes, and there was an additional 30 minutes of silence at the end. I couldn't figure out what was wrong, and I had screwed up in Audition. I had forgot to delete a ton of
But it was empty space that wasn't showing up until we uploaded it.
Yeah.
So it was really weird.
Weird
I think
deal.
We figured that. I think we cleaned it up now. I think we understand what we need to do.
Oh, yeah. We're learning the ins and outs of this thing, and I don't know. It's just with anything you've got to learn that's new. There's gonna be a learning curve. We've never done anything like this before, and I'm definitely not an audio engineer. I'm a graphic designer, so those things don't translate over fantastic. But we're doing our best. we were initially kind of making intros for the podcast, just to make it a little more fun or engaging or entertaining, and I found some really awesome songs by a dude named Grammatic. And I was really excited whenever I showed Attilio this fantastic intro I made. And yeah, then I started researching copyright law and fair use and all that, and kind of realized that I couldn't use anything I had built within the last 3 hours of me making a bunch of these things. And so we had to go through the whole process of finding fair music to use and all this crap. We're still trying to get on Spotify. We're 3 episodes away from being allowed to be on iHeartRadio.
Two actually.
2 episodes?
Yeah, I think it's just okay. So this one and then one other, because we just need 5.
Oh yeah.
Because we have episode 0, right?
Episode 0. I'm gonna forget about episode 0 forever. But There's one thing we definitely did improve on was our audio is better in episode one than episode zero, because one of us isn't right next to the mic and one of us isn't away from the mic.
Yeah, we are actually coordinating that a little bit.
We're doing better, but man, we've got a decent amount of listens so far, and we're getting a lot of subscribers and stuff. So I'm really, really just excited about it. Like, I think if the numbers weren't racking up even just a little bit, I'd be kind of a little discouraged from continuing to spend time on this. But we are growing, and I am having fun with it. So
yeah, this is some good stuff. Just mega thanks to all of you. Did you want to jump into stop kissing everyone's butt and just hit some branding process things? Or
yeah, I mean, so this week's actually been extremely productive for us. We've never taken the time to actually brand ourselves well, or to at least like plan out our brand identity.
I think we have like once, maybe, but it was like still really
disorganized and disjointed.
Yeah, like we didn't know how to go about it, and we've been like Travis has done a great job at like understanding how to do like brand work in general, and like doing a step-by-step kind of thing, like a process for businesses. And so we like did it for ourselves. It was awesome.
It's kind of like when we were building websites for people, and that was like our only service. Is our website actually needed a ton of work, but we were working on everyone else's website, so we didn't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
So actually allocating the time to our own brand, I think, was really helpful. We spent like 4 to 6 hours in front of a whiteboard just working away and trying to understand our company and
figuring out the key things that we do well. I think it's something that everybody needs to do, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Like, big or small, every company needs to – every company has a brand, whether they like it or not. Like, and I think there's some really big misconceptions when it comes to brands. One of those things being is that your brand is only your logo or your graphic design work or whatever. But your brand is actually it's a vibe. It's a feel. It's an external perception
– of your business.
Yeah, by the public. Yeah. Like – that's why like even PR affects your brand, right? So huge brand changes again for United Airlines or for American or whatever, who are having all these crazy problems keeping scorpions out of their planes and hitting people with strollers. Like, their public perception has changed. That's not just a PR issue. That's a brand like crisis.
Yeah, and they definitely will need to somehow remedy the situation. I know that some of those guys that were having some of those huge issues have started doing like huge changes in like pricing structures or updates and what they do for like remuneration as far as delivering some value to their customers again, to try and build that trust back. And, you know, hopefully as a company, as a small business or an entrepreneur in general, small business owner, you don't ever like mess up your customers' trust in you. Hopefully you're always like sticking to your guns and really like providing them the value and showing them all the time why they came to you in the first place, and like really doubling down on your values and your like X factor, which like really separates you from the crowd.
Yeah.
If you're doing that, I really do think you always like kind of stick out. It's how craft beers like separate themselves all the time, where it's like, wow, this is such a unique type of beer. I love this beer. And then people just fall in love with that craft beer. And, you know, they just like double down on their X factor, and it just like boosts them. It helps them get to that point where they can like sustain themselves.
I've always noticed like, the kind of more mainstream beers, they always focus on like America as a whole, like, but more like the more craft snooty beers are always focused on like the local, like where they're from, like the scene or whatever.
You gotta capture it, right? I mean,
but that's crazy. But yeah, so brand identity is extremely important, and I think we want to talk about that a good bit today. We've got some awesome news articles coming up here in a little while, just kind of discussing that further. But I mean, just to kind of let you in on like even our process and how we discovered how we need to be communicating, who we need to be communicating to, like understanding our customers better. we started really kind of creating customer profiles. So a customer profile is basically a generic representation of the people that frequent your business or services, right? So we're selling, you know, marketing tactics like search engine optimization, graphic design work, social media management, things like that. And so people who are going to be coming to our website, or who we actually want perusing our site, will be like CMOs, CEOs, and like small business owners, like people who actually own the companies, or people who are in charge of the marketing of the business.
And maybe individuals.
You know? Maybe some individuals as well. And so what we did was we went into each one, CMOs, CEO, and small business owners, and we really researched and learned about what they all do, you know, for a job level, or like what they're doing, you know, in their day to day. We learned a lot about their pains, like what are some of the struggles that people in these positions have. Like, we learned that CMOs actually usually have a lifespan of 2 years in a company, because there's just so much pressure. They're CMOs. They've got a very, you know, analytical, creative, and interpersonal job. They're managing teams. They're heading up creative. They're, you know, dealing with, you know, analytics and
they numbers. Always have to have the graph going up.
Yeah,
and if part you're not of, having the graph go up, if you're not having that revenue increase, if you're not having mm-hmm. that profit increase, you're failing at that job.
Yeah, part of the revenue for the company really falls a lot on the CMO, and so if they're not doing well, you could always find another CMO. And so we realized, like, yeah, we need to build trust with those CMOs, because yeah, they're stressed out, right? They've got a stressful job. They've got, you know, can they trust us to make marketing materials look good? Can they trust us to get their site found on Google and to increase their site traffic?
Like, increase new customers in general.
Yeah, like, can we
help them fulfill their job?
Can we engage their audience?
Yeah.
You know, can we build their, you know, help supplement, you know, the building of their public perception? Like, it's a lot. So, you know, and we did the same with CEOs and small business owners, but all that to say, I mean, it's very important that if you're running a business, that you really do some research into who your customers are and try to understand their pain points and ways that your services or your business can be of help. I think learning that and understanding that will help you write good content and engage your clients in a way that's meaningful and will kind of bring back repeat customers, you know?
Yeah. We also like totally broke down and found out sort of our message as a company in general. Mm-hmm. So we wrote down six, I don't know what they would be, subsections.
Pillars. I don't know. I don't know what to really call them.
But really it just involved like the,
culture,
yeah,
customer voice, feel, impact, and then our X factor, which is what is supposed to really set us apart. Like what's the big deal with Hone? And so, you know, if you're trying to figure out your culture, you're trying to decide like, you know, we're modern, we're invested, we're transparent, you know what I mean? Like, and even, you know, even this podcast is part of us trying to be transparent as a brand,
or show our voice,
yeah,
a little bit, and get people to know us in general, or show our expertise even.
Yeah, you find out who your customers are. So like our customers, they're CMOs, CEOs, and small business owners. So they're leaders, they're time pressed, they need results. We want a voice that's attentive, friendly, informative, and we want to be a cheerleader. Like we want to cheer on our clients. Like we called one of our clients the other day who doubled their web traffic in 2 months.
Yeah.
And we called and congratulated them, and
might bring them a cake sometime.
we're thinking about bringing them a cookie cake that says like 200% on it,
or something. Because they're near here. That's so.
Yeah, I mean, just to be like a cheerleader and to know that like we're in this with them.
Yoda to their Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, like your client is always the hero of the story. You know, you're the mentor figure. You're the Yoda that can help them through their journey into their, you know, completing their goals. But yeah, like you're trying to figure out the feel, you know? So if we have like certain impacts that we want to leave on our clients, like we want them to be confident, we have to have a feel of confidence. Or if we want them to feel better served, they need to feel that we're informed or timely. And if we want them to be at peace, just having chill vibes, like being just really, really calm and not, you know,
confrontational or have like weird. Yeah.
And we want them not to feel alone.
Yeah.
You know, and so us being available, having like a feel of availability, is also super important. And so that's kind of like the process we went into figuring out our brand. And then finally you come to your X factor, what sets you apart. And we want to be caring about our product and our clients. And we want to really be informed because we feel like for the people that we're servicing, that is the best possible posture that we can have for it as a company.
Yeah. So using those pillars as an example, you should be able to theoretically create something similar for your own brand, or at least help understand yourself a little bit better. I know it was super helpful for us when we did it. We were kind of in the middle of a stressful day, just working on, you know, customer fulfillment and whatever else we were doing that day. I don't really remember too well. and then we kind of just like went off on this tangent. It wasn't a tangent. It was a directed tangent that really brought us, I think, peace at the end of it, because we really understood who and what we are in this new era of ourselves. And it really just, I think, is going to increase how we communicate with people, not only through our website, but through calls when we call people from now on, or emails, etc. So maybe we'll make like a huge printout of that and just like staple it on the wall or something.
We did a lot more than just figuring out those pillars, but I mean, I don't know. I think it's just super crucial for everyone to give it a shot. You know, they seem like kind of like silly, you know, exercises at first, but like when you get to the end of it, you're like,
so that's who we are.
Yeah, that's who we are. That's how we perceived her. Man, we don't communicate that at all.
Yeah.
You know,
we definitely need to pull out more chill vibes.
Need a lot more calm with, you know, certain things
or whatever.
Absolutely.
However your system lands on that. So,
but yeah,
also built up our statement from there. So like just in general, who we are, how we depict ourselves. So literally from those pillars, we built up kind of like little statements geared towards our target market's pain points, put together a statement that would ring really strong for them, built that up. And now I think we're really excited for our new website.
Yeah. We decided to completely do a new website around this like brand exploration. You know, it's like our, you know, it's almost like we're rebranding, but it's like our logo is remaining the same. Our colors are remaining the same. Like most of the things about us are staying constant, but understanding our brand has led to us like redoing our content and our message and how we communicate.
Yeah, because hopefully we want other people to understand us just like we understand ourselves.
Sure. Sure.
And I'm sure that would ring true for anybody really trying to make money in general. Like if you're on the internet trying to make money, if you're in a store trying to make money, it helps you sell to people when you like when someone understands you, because people buy from people. People don't buy from, you know, company X.
Oh yeah. I mean, a good maybe exercise into figuring out like, do people really understand your brand or what you're offering? Ask those around you, you know, point blank, like what does my company do? What do I do?
Yeah.
You know, my girlfriend's in the counseling program at Texas Tech, and her cohort goes out and they do all kinds of stuff together. They're like inseparable. And sometimes I'm working so much, I can't always make it to the events, and they'll be like, oh, what does Travis do again? And she's always like, I don't know how to explain it. I don't know what, you know, it
does something with
search engine optimization or something like that. Or I don't know. Ask those around you, like, do they understand and know what you do and what you offer? Because if they don't,
no one else does. Yeah. Unless it's like super niche. But I mean, I think we came to this conclusion that we really just kind of have to write for like, we have to write like we're teaching like fourth graders straight up.
Oh, yeah.
Because not everyone knows what you do. Not everyone may know what you sell. And if you're just absolutely clear with it, I mean, it takes an expert to teach a beginner. It really does. Like an expert can talk to an expert all day, but an expert talking to a beginner is like another obstacle entirely.
So, oh, yeah. And I, man, it's hard for me because I love writing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I love writing like really pretty, you know, sounding words or nice statements that just sound good.
Metaphorical.
But, yeah. Lots of metaphors, alliteration, that kind of stuff. And I, it's just not simple enough. People are just not understanding what we're communicating.
Now that I think about it, I wonder if that's why so many people don't like, like Shakespeare and poetry, because it does involve a lot of like floral language or interpreted language or just language that, you know, maybe out of style right now.
I don't know.
And they just, I mean, I've always liked Shakespeare. I mean,
sure.
Just because to me, I got to use my imagination on what some of the words meant.
Yeah.
And so I kind of just like put together what the story was supposed to be. And then, I don't know. It's just kind of enjoyable, but
I don't know. It's different, but I'm also trying to figure out like how many people actually read the content on websites?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we have heat maps on our site to like track where people like have their mouse for like extended periods of time or like where people are clicking.
Yeah.
And it's always kind of hard because I feel like people kind of move their mouses just all over the place or wherever.
I mean, someone in marketing that I very much respect told me that people do read content, but it has to be good content and it has to be skimmable. I'm not sure if that's true or not. Like, I still find myself skimming through stuff.
Think that people only read headings. Like, headings or subheadings. Like, seriously, because that's what I do. I read subheadings and headings to find where I need to read. And then if I'm interested in a subheading, then I'll read the content because that's what pertains to what I went to the article for.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
or maybe if they're very serious about purchasing your product, then they might actually read.
Then they will probably dive in. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. So maybe it really comes down to is almost like instantly pitching your service in a way that makes it, that you know, piques their interest, and then they'll read your content.
Maybe the content. So that actually brings up a good point. Maybe like the headings and subheadings are for the people that are aware that they need something. And then the content inside or under the headings and subheadings is just really strong for the people who are considering your product.
Mm.
And then having a call to action in a strategic place is once they've considered it and they've agreed to purchase from you or work with you, then they can take that call to action. So having like all three steps of that small funnel, like in one location with a heading that's really powerful to drag them in because they're aware of their needs. Then the subcontext to quell their consideration, and then a call to action and a strategic spot for exactly what they were looking for at that moment. Boom, that's gonna turn them right into a lead. The sweet spot.
But I think there are some big SEO updates recently, right? Like over Easter weekend?
Yeah, well, I don't know if there were updates. I mean, Google and other search engines always have some updates, and you always see like some weird fluctuations with the search engine ranking positions, the SERPs. And over the weekend of Easter, so not this weekend, last weekend,
mm-hmm.
There were some like pretty big dips in our accounts. Not big dips, but they were like considerable dips for some of the search engine rankings. And this week, for some reason, they just like all shot back up, like almost doubling over where they were at, like beyond their dipping points. So,
and that was across the board for all the accounts?
That was across the board for all of our accounts.
That's crazy.
I don't know if anyone else saw something like that. If any SEOs are listening that like actively keep track of like SERPs or like competitor rankings, definitely let us know what you guys think. We don't have like a Mozcast here or anything like that. So we're not like doing some crazy research on it, but you know, we do keep track of all that good stuff just to kind of see how the Google algorithms are changing at certain times. So if anyone has updates on that, that would be sweet. Maybe leave it in, maybe in our Instagrams or something. I mean, how would you like to get information from our listeners?
Well, I know we just set up a Facebook page as well as an Instagram. I think that's kind of the main like lines of communication. You can hit us up and comment on our SoundCloud.
Do we have a Instagram for the podcast?
Do we not?
I don't think it's for the podcast.
Oh, okay. We do not have an Instagram for the podcast.
Okay. I think we just have a Facebook for the podcast. And then I guess our personal Instagram accounts. But I don't mean.
Let's do Facebook.
Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go look up To Build an Agency on Facebook. You'll see our cover art. And
actually, that would be so sweet because we'll be able to do like Facebook Live stuff.
Absolutely. And, okay. we eventually are wanting to build this thing into like a live broadcast with video and everything. So we can jump on like YouTube Live, Facebook Live, whatever.
Periscope. Like, I mean, anything, whatever.
Try our hand at video broadcasts and everything. So if you will, go get us a like on Facebook and follow us there.
Yeah, we can definitely interact a little bit more that way. I mean, I'll probably be monitoring it. I don't know. Are you even added as an admin on that?
I hope so.
we'll make sure that we're both on there so that way we can answer adequately. It's a very new page, so if you can give it a like, that would mean a lot to us. Sure. What else is going on this week? We need to get new cards, right? New business cards with
new business cards
with new phone numbers, new emails, new.
I'm sad to see them go, dude.
They're beautiful.
Like, so if you have never seen our business cards, I'm sorry. Like, we
or touch them. I think the touch of them is like.
I had a good friend of mine clear his wallet out, and he called me up. He's like, dude, I just dumped all these business cards out of my wallet, but I kept yours. They're like these really like thick black business cards with like a gold flake kind of raised up with our old logo on it. And
just sexy. Dude, we should take pictures of our business cards and put them on Instagram and just be like, these are amazing. Like, plus the touch. So this one time we were at this Chamber of Commerce event, or me and one of our salesmen were at this Chamber of Commerce event. And
Chicago?
Yeah. And they had this like steak gift card or gift certificate drawing. And so probably about 200 people dropped their business cards into this like trash bag looking bag. And, you know, when the time came around for everyone to like pull the first place award out, which is the steak gift certificate, they reached in and they felt, you know, this amazing card, and they were just like, they just pulled it right out. And of course we won that steak dinner gift card. It was my salesman who won it. I didn't win it, but
oh my gosh.
I mean, that's just like sweet. That's phenomenal. And they were like, this card feels so good when they pull it out. It's like, yeah, that's why it won. So maybe we'll have to replicate the I can't even describe it. It's almost like a soft plastic or something.
I don't know. But all that to say, if you're about to get new business cards for your business, maybe look outside the box a little bit from like the typical flimsy, normal business cards.
Yeah, we've had really good like retention. Like, people remember us really well just because they feel so good. It's different.
I don't think it'd be the same if we had regular cards, like, because like usually when someone gives me their card, it almost always ends up in the trash can, you know.
And they're too flimsy. I hate when business cards are bent. Like, I think that's my number one pet peeve, because I like it when they're just like flat and clean. Mm. And especially if you're like putting it in your wallet or something, yeah, that thing's gonna get messed up.
but for sure, dude. Well, you have some articles for us, or?
Yeah, I pulled out a couple things for us to take a look at. One of them was, so I have this crazy idea.
Okay.
I have this idea for our city, the city of Lubbock, to have a crazy, like, rebranding, large scale rebranding, like, for the city, straight up. Like, take city money to brand the city and make it awesome.
For context, like, for our listeners who aren't from around here, mm-hmm. We're in a city called Lubbock, Texas. It's probably got 250,000 people in it, and it's growing like crazy, like thousands of people.
It's got a third million, 350,000, yeah, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay, it's bigger than I thought. But, yeah, we're a growing city. I mean, we're growing at such a rapid rate, and lots of people are moving here, and it's kind of crazy. But we aren't even on the map. Yeah. Like,
a smaller sister city just north of us, Amarillo, is on the map and we're not.
You know, shout out to Amarillo, but you're smaller than us and we should be on the map and not you. So
or both of us, like, hell, I'll share the map, but put us on there. Like,
there's enough of this map.
Yeah, Texas is pretty big.
But
so I pulled up this article because it was literally published this past week. When was it? The 16th that it was published. And I guess there's been this guy, I think he's from the UK, and pretty much what he does is for the last 30 years, he's been an advocate for why cities need to do branding. And it's super interesting because he talks about like what sort of mistakes are there, what are the success stories for city branding, how do you even begin doing a city branding. And he talks a lot about how some of the cities that are thriving now, so like the huge cities that have pulled up in these last like 100, 200 years, that they probably had a better branding strategy and it made people want to go there for jobs or go there for work or start businesses there in general. And he makes a pretty strong argument. The article's on WSJ.com. It's called Why Cities Need to Create Their Own Global Brands. And if you have a minute to check it out, I would definitely recommend it.
Is it possible to link these in the descriptions on the podcast?
I don't know if we can link it in the descriptions. Maybe they can check it out on Facebook. So we could probably put it on Facebook.
Yeah, we will post the articles that we talk about from now on our podcast Facebook page for you to check out. So if we pique your interest with anything you want to check out further, you can go there to check them out.
Yeah, definitely. I'll make sure to get that done for everyone. So. But I guess back to the cities. I mean, what do you think about branding a city? Like, I mean,
that's a crazy undertaking. Like, how do you create, or how do you facilitate a brand identity strategy that not only represents your city as like this like concept, this branded concept, this you know, the city government or whatever, but to represent more than a quarter million people.
Oh, for Lubbock specifically?
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, in terms of our goals, like we'd love to rebrand our hometown and put us on the map. And
I mean, I can read you a little excerpt for how
yeah, what did
his name's Mr. Clark. I don't know Mr. what his Clark. First name is. I think it says it up.
That's Greg here. Clark.
Greg Clark.
Urbanist Greg Clark talks about which cities do it really well and how some could do it a lot better.
So the section is called A Long, Slow Process, and the Wall Street Journal asks him, how does a city even begin to create a brand? And Mr. Clark answers by saying, city positioning is a long, slow process that doesn't need to involve much money or ad agencies. It does involve leaders bringing together different representatives of the city. The main steps would be to benchmark the city's identity against other places with comparable assets, recruit citizens and city institutions to build an alliance, align existing events and marketing with an agreed-upon common story, train citizens and civic leaders to be champions of that story, and preview progress annually to develop additional approaches. So he says that Tel Aviv is a good example. Despite a vibrant tourism sector, the Israeli city in 1998 was losing population to its regional neighbors. So Mayor Ron Haludai stepped in and effectively recruited citizens by investing in public spaces, fixing potholes, improving schools, tackling crime, and promoting the famous Bauhaus buildings, which I guess are a collection of 4,000 modernist buildings in Tel Aviv. So the population returned and new immigrants arrived as the city successfully evolved into a quote-unquote livable city, then a quote-unquote nonstop city. And then a quote-unquote startup city. So that's almost like a revival of a city, it looks like. Wow. Mr. Clark goes on to finalize his point here, saying that in a way, the sequential positioning provided a narrative that has helped build a brand for external audiences as well as a loyalty among the citizens and stakeholders. And, I mean, as far as like something for Texas goes, I or like Lubbock, Texas, we could almost say that we should position ourselves to like attract places for knowledge workers or institutions, cultural and sporting events, and then maybe film shoots. So how we could maybe go about tackling that is just like put out some awesome video content, have people become champions of it. I mean, this is a college town. Like the 18 to 35 year olds around here are probably going to be mingling with Dallas, Houston, and Austin
sure.
readily, and as well as the surrounding areas. So, you know, put out some of that, continue to grow in the like cultural and knowledge based institutions, and you know, increase the amount of just workers in general that come here. I actually think that Lubbock is going to be like the new area. The
sure.
it will truly embody the hub city, since that's its nickname.
Like, I think it's going to take a lot more than us to do it too. I mean, it's going to be a matter of getting like
citywide effort.
Yeah, it's going to be a citywide effort of everyone just putting out good content about Lubbock and just doing stuff. And I think if several companies are putting out just really good, engaging, or funny content in our city, like others will follow suit. Like if we can make that into a trend, or if we can inspire that in some crazy way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I'd be really interested to see like that happen. You know, it's a long-term goal for us, but I think it's totally possible, you know,
sparking some like creative, like uproar of creatives. You
so
know?
We've got like a few famous people that were from here, yeah. you know? And so like Lubbock like clings to that, you know, like it's like that whole like small town mentality when someone was from there, who ended up being famous. So
Buddy Holly,
yeah, rock god Buddy Holly is from Lubbock, Texas. And, Willie McCool, he was an astronaut.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he was from here. I think he was on that spaceship that disintegrated in the atmosphere.
Oh.
Yeah, was it the Discovery, or I can't remember what it was called, but Willie McCool's from here. And it's like our city just really clings to these like local legends. You know, but we don't really like, we're not making more, you know. Yeah. Like, and I think that more people seem to be putting out good content and
becoming those local legends.
And I've seen some interesting like branding, like new ways like that Lubbock's kind of trying to brand itself. But man, if we just join in that effort, that'd be like super, super impactful and meaningful.
I'm telling you, I want to make we need to pull together some strings to get in contact with like whoever's in charge of some funding for the city, and just like really pull some power plays to get it to happen. And I don't know. I don't think it's out of realm.
We just got to get
the right people in the right places.
We just got to keep building our business and building our credibility. And then when we've got more of a megaphone and more of like a voice and more credibility behind us, I mean,
we're working with some decent players right now. Like at least people who have been connected with the government around here, the local government. So to be continued. TBC.
You have any other articles for us, man, that our users might, or our listeners might find?
Dude, we talk users so much. It's just like a marketing term, I guess, and it's just like ingrained in us.
Well, I started creative as a UI UX designer. Yeah. So like everything that I know as a creative or in this role at all like revolves around the word user. And so I'm like, oh, our listeners, they're listening to our content.
Yeah, they're listening because, I mean, I've never had radio experience or anything like that, podcast. So, like, I can't even begin to fathom, like, someone listening to this. Like, that's impressive. I don't know. And plus, I don't really listen to podcasts too much. I think I only listen to one podcast.
I listen to a few.
So, but yeah, so next thing, which actually is a pretty good sequitur to our first article, is just the digital trends of 2017 and if brands and customers are on the same page. And this was published on marketingprofs.com, which I follow pretty closely. They put out some really good content, and really the article brings up a lot of good points, but I think the biggest thing that I'd really like to talk about is that they polled 1,000 people just like out in the public to see how they felt about some of the major emerging consumer technologies and the sort of things that they would use in 2017. And the top three things that people would use are mobile payments at 32% of the people, voice search at 24% of the people, and virtual reality at 23% of the people. I don't know. To me, I'm not a huge mobile payment person.
I've never done it, so that's like that's just like Apple Pay, Google Wallet, and stuff.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Or like,
I thought most businesses were doing that.
They are, but I just like I don't know. I don't use it. I don't know how convenient it is. I mean, I guess actually, technically, you can set up. Can you put like your driver's license in the wallet and stuff?
I wish like that would be an incredible feature. Like if you forget your wallet at home and you get pulled over, you can pull out your phone.
Yeah, I would like that. I think in that case, I would like include my IDs and stuff like that.
Yeah, but make my entire like make my entire wallet digital. But I think there's also security concerns.
That's what I'm thinking. Like if someone jacks my phone and just gets in it somehow, I mean, at least I feel like by separating my phone and my wallet, like the security concern goes down.
I completely get you. Like, and that's why they ever put my credit card just in my phone. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I don't know if I really like that idea, you know, that someone having access to my credit card, but
right, or just in case they can like crack the entrance code somehow. I mean, I know that there was a huge like data leak, I think on WikiLeaks, talking about how the CIA occasionally can buy these loopholes into like Apple systems and Google systems, in case they do need to like extract some information. So that's kind of crazy. I don't know mobile payments. I don't know. But
that's a little scary. So the next one was what?
Voice search.
Voice search.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, I could totally see that. I mean, I think a lot of people are a little bit more conscious about like texting and driving.
Well, are people not using voice search?
I don't know. I think that maybe they just would like a larger integration of it. So maybe like. I mean, I know Google's like really doing hot. I mean,
well, who
I know,
doesn't use Siri
or like Cortana? Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff.
Okay, I see you. Like more,
so maybe just more of that. Mm. I think the
Amazon Alexa is getting big.
Yeah, like probably putting together like a good home integration system with just a bunch of voice features. I think that's what's like really hot. Like if you know about like the Xbox One, and obviously if you have like Cortana or Siri or something, or Alexa, you know, maybe just including more of those things to like integrate inside of your home. People probably want just a little bit more of that. And then obviously like on the go stuff, so maybe like voice search in your car and like doing all that cool stuff. Voice search in your shower, so that way you can like bring up some lyrics. Oh, that's a good idea. Like
one of my favorite things to do is watch like people in the older generation try to interact with voice search. Like my dad will ask, you know, Siri or Alexa or whatever to do things it's not even programmed to do. And he'll get like pissed off when they can't answer the question. Oh man, we got my pop a Amazon Alexa for Christmas. And he was asking that thing every possible question that like, I don't know. It was unreal. But yeah, he was getting so angry because it's like, I do not know the answer to that question. He would just trip out like, what? Why not? You know, I thought you could ask this thing anything.
I thought it was the nexus of the world. Like,
yeah, but pretty crazy.
And then third place on the list comes in virtual reality.
Virtual reality. That's
I love virtual reality, but
I like the idea of virtual reality
until it's like practical. Like nobody wants to walk around with the headset.
No, like I'm not going to carry a headset in my backpack so that I can zone out at a coffee shop and put my cell phone on my face. Like it's just nothing that I'm interested in doing.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone else who is either, but,
I think where VR is going to really blossom is once the tech becomes way more intuitive and
convenient.
So I think once the tech is there, like once the hardware is there,
yeah,
I think that's when it's going to blossom. And I also think it's going to blossom when VR and AR kind of like go hand in hand with this new convenient display system. That's when it's going to blossom. Like being able to like take a look at a, I don't know, like an image and understand what it is, or being able to look at different texts from foreign languages and have those things be translated instantly, which they do have those things now. So the tech is not like out of realm. It just needs to become more convenient, I think.
I think so too. Like we've actually got some friends who work or really own a virtual reality company.
Yeah.
Big shout out to our boys at Define. car capture 360.
Yeah.
They're taking 360 degree cameras and they're using them to give
just absolutely the best display
for like cars. For online shoppers of vehicles. You can get, you know, the outside view in 360, but you also get the car interior, which I think is so cool. Like to be able to sit in your home and be able to see in high definition exactly what the interior looks like.
I feel like people are ready to buy cars online if they could test drive them online.
The test drive is like kind of everything. Yeah. There's only one other thing that hold me back from buying a car other than the test drive is I think that until smell-o-vision is here, I'm going to really struggle to buy a vehicle because what? Like,
smell-o-vision.
Like it's got to smell good or does it needs to smell at least neutral. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like my dad got in a car wreck a few weeks ago and, you know, we've been looking for new trucks for him, and we'd sit in some that just smelled so bad, like the inside of an ashtray. Smell was a
turnoff for you.
Oh yeah, like we got in there and it was a no go. Like we look in some of the vehicles, and there'd be like cigarette burns in the seat and stuff, and it just wasn't appealing. And so I don't know, if I was buying a car online, I would super struggle with just the fact that I can't smell it and I can't drive it. But. If the view is good enough, and that's assuming that the car doesn't get bought up immediately, because like the turnover between, you know, them acquiring the vehicles and selling them is so fast. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's going to really help people like get interested in a vehicle and go check it out or
more cars in general,
or maybe understand what kind of vehicles they just want to buy. So like the end consumer is like more educated in that vehicle and the features and what everything looks like on the internal, inside.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'd be really interested to see how, you know, B2C virtual reality or AR 360 degree camera work is going to impact businesses.
Yeah. Right now it looks like a lot of people want better products.
Yeah.
Better services. They aren't looking for like a disruptive product, which I don't think anyone's ever really looking for a disruptive product because they don't know what they want until it's in front of them, you know?
No.
So everyone's always looking for, you know, the upgraded, the better product, the integrated product. So super good article, though.
Everyone thought smartphones weren't going to take off. And now I can't leave my phone, you know.
I can't leave my phone.
Yeah, I can't leave it.
Like I actually work through my phone.
Like Attilio went to the lake with some of our buddies the other week. And he, you know, the business lines connected to his cell phone. So he left his phone with me for the day, and he was just like having separation anxiety almost.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird because I'm so used to working.
Sure.
And this was like a Wednesday, like straight up middle of the week, like 2:00, like totally like you wouldn't have been able to make it unless you like ran your own business. So went out there and I was like, I have to leave it because otherwise, one, I'm going to be working if I don't leave it, and two, I'm not going to be able to get probably good reception at the lake or whatever, you know, for whatever reason. So I just left it. But I mean, the phones are so integral now, like, and it makes sense. I mean, you can get clients from your phone, like literally using Instagram, you can get customers. Like,
yeah. And I think VR is going to be that way too. I think that they call social media web 2.0. And I do think VR is going to be web 3.0, but just the journey to get there and the hardware has just got to get to where it's not disruptive, and it's convenient, and it's user-friendly, because I will never buy a headset to mount the phone to my face.
Have you seen the Facebook VR stuff that they're working on?
Yes, dude. You were showing it to me. I think we showed it to the guys at Define as well.
I mean, that stuff is really cool. Facebook is really making a push for it, and I like that. They have like avatars and stuff that go over people. Like,
we're planning on actually having the guys from Define on the podcast soon to talk about B2C virtual reality and how VR is going to change the game for industries. So we should probably even like find those articles and like, you know, the news on what Facebook's doing with VR, and we'll have really the experts weigh in on it.
Yeah. I mean, these guys really just, it's just the highest quality stuff. Like I very, very much admire their product.
Oh, 100%. So, it's such a cool product. I'm just be very interested to see the journey.
I want to see, I think it'd be so cool for our listeners to check them out and just review the product. Like, just give us an idea of what they think of it. Or if they would work on something like that or use it. I mean, if anyone's on the web right now, or as you're listening to this, or if you have an idea, go check out carcapture360.com. And they have some like cool view changes and stuff, like ultra cool stuff. I just like, would you guys buy a car after seeing something like that? After seeing like an interior view like that? I think it would definitely help me buy. I mean,
oh yeah. I still need smell-o-vision and I still need to be able to test drive it through VR somehow. If you can make me test drive it through VR,
yeah,
I will consider it. But, and you know, I'll probably be changing my tune here in 5 years because we all do, but
yeah, but I think that's how it goes. I mean, did you have anything else? I think we can sign off, man.
I think we can sign off. Leave us comments. Give us some feedback on how we're doing. If this episode sucks, let us know, and we'll read your review next time and all that good stuff. But well, with that, I guess that's the end of the episode.
Yep. Thank you so much, guys. We will catch you later.
All right. Peace.